Everyone, to another edition of the Middlers podcast, and today our topic is language in South Asia. Specifically, we'll be talking about Hindi and Urdu. We'll be talking about speaking the languages, being immersed in the languages, and also about how giving some insight as to what our experiences were in using both languages. So, Bill, great to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too, Yusuf. Great to connect.
So I wanted to, for everyone on the call, I think it's important for them to know that in your 2 years in Hyderabad, Bill, you speak, I would classify as fluent Hindi. And not only that, but you picked up some Telugu, and in my conversation with you, you seem to be very, very immersed in the language. So I wanted, for one, want to know a little bit more about your experience with Hindi.
Yeah, sure. So got to India in 07 and made some good friends locally, including some expats, as I think I've shared on prior episodes. And a good friend named John was actually taking Hindi lessons, a British guy who had, at that point, spent a good 10 years living in different countries, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, just a lot of different places, really a more advanced expat than certainly Tara and I were. So I got intrigued by that because, you know, I don't have a lot of intellectual gifts, but for some reason language is definitely one that has always come very easily to me. And I dabble in quite a few and speak a few pretty well. So I said, hey, can I meet your Hindi teacher and connect with this guy? And he said, absolutely. So I connected with Abdul, and he was from rural Karnataka, and his whole family was in Hyderabad. So he, too, was, you know, an outsider to the city. He's a pretty young guy. And as a Muslim guy, he favored Urdu and favored more elegant form of Hindi than is spoken in Hyderabad. We can talk a little bit about that. But it kicked in, and as time passed, he said, wow, you're really getting this. And I said, yeah. And I guess my big observation is that Hindi is a little bit different than French or Spanish, the other languages that I've learned, in that it almost has, I don't know how to quantify this, but it almost has a mathematical quality. It's very logical how it works. And when you encounter a rule, like how to conjugate or cutting your verbs in half in advance of sakta hon or sakte hai, those things, they just don't vary, right? So there's not a lot of complexity, but the differences between English and Hindi were considerable. So I was starting with nothing to help me. But it was a good experience.
So there are many people, many expats who go to other countries hoping to learn the language and being immersed in the culture. Immersion in the culture, it seems like a possibility for most people. With the food and the music and making local friends. But really, in the language, that's unique. So in my experience, I've lived, of course, I'm originally from Pakistan, but I've lived in Turkey as well. I've lived in Saudi Arabia. I've spent some time in these different countries, visited Europe, spent long periods of time there as well. And it's as an expat, actually having a venue to practice the language is tough because in India, everyone speaks English. Now, granted, it's a particular form of English, but most people speak English. So how did you get people to speak Hindi with you? Because I remember in Turkey, it was a challenge for me because I went to an American school there. This was my formative years, and everyone spoke English there. And outside, there were many people who were more interested in practicing their English with me than actually letting me practice my Turkish. So that was a barrier. So how did you cross that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this observation, I think for folks from India and Pakistan, they would totally resonate with this. But for a lot of my American friends, they're like, oh, so you had to learn Hindi. I can say this definitively. Hindi had absolutely no purpose in my life. As English totally dominated, right?
Yeah.
And so there was no reason to use it in business. There was no reason to use it in transactions at stores. I mean, it had no bearing. The folks, we were fortunate enough to have people that worked in our house. They all spoke Telugu and tried to speak English, but really didn't. And you can get a lot done with just gestures and things like that. And I learned enough Telugu to talk to them anyway. But anyway, so back to your question. It was not out of necessity that I learned Hindi at all. It was out of almost novelty. And it occurred to me right when I got there, because there was a time boundary around my assignment in India. My company said, hey, this is a 2-year deal. And for a lot of folks, that's kind of open-ended. But I had a sense that it probably was just going to be that 2 years. So I said, I'm going to give my farewell speech in front of my company in Hindi. And I did. I did so in Mumbai and Hyderabad. And actually, it was quite a good speech. It was probably about 10 minutes, and I did have notes, but it was awesome. I mean, it's really
now. Did you learn to write Hindi as well? Just so for people that are listening, so they'll understand the extent to which you were immersed in this. How challenging was the writing piece versus just a verbal?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I do read and write Hindi, but I do so like a 5-year-old child, right? I sound out the words, and I don't read with any great speed, but I can read Hindi. And you know, when I was driving around, I definitely picked up on what Kotak Bank is in Hindi, you know, and certainly a lot of signs became real familiar, and I could work my way through them very quickly. And some words came quite easily. The writing in Hindi. With all the languages that I've learned, there's always the what I call the compound letters. So O-E, right, or O-O. We're so quickly pulled to, well, O-O is the sound oo. But if you really back up to a phonetic language where a letter makes a sound and they don't really have any relationship to the letter next to them, I was like, Hindi's incredibly easy. You know, the way that a letter is written doesn't change, and the letters in Hindi are exactly like they sound, so whenever I read a word, I immediately know how to pronounce it, where maybe a Hindi speaker reading English has to work through all the strange spellings that we have and the way that pronunciations really don't have a lot to do with their spelling. So I found reading and writing Hindi quite easy, actually, and I liked it, but they don't really have vowels exactly. I don't know if that's that way in Urdu, but Hindi has little marks you make on a consonant to produce a vowel sound, but there's not a proper standalone vowel in the way we think of it. I mean, there are, but there aren't. So it was a little more like Hebrew, which I think has that as well. But anyway, I'm wandering a little far afield. I did learn to read and write Hindi as well as speak it. And the one thing I picked up on when I started to listen to Hindi is that there is by no means just one Hindi. There's hundreds of Hindis in India.
Yes. So that's a very interesting thing. And you went there and you learned Hindi from a Hyderabadi from Karnataka who is actually of a Muslim background. So that goes to show a little bit about how diverse Hindi is. Hindi is just one of many, many dialects in India for those of of our listeners who are familiar with India and familiar with its diversity. But, you know, I would say that the common Hindi, by and large, if one were to speak Hindi and be able to get along in India or in Pakistan or, you know, for that matter, even in Nepal or Bangladesh, because even in those countries, many people do speak Hindi, you would want to speak the Bollywood movie type of Hindi, which is somewhat universal. And you, from your perspective, you're able to follow along very well, I would say, around, what, Bill, 80 or 90% of a Bollywood movie or more?
On a good day,
okay,
is what I'd say. You know, it's pretty interesting. So we just watched Chhota Akbar for the second time, and I watched that pretty early on in my time in Hindi India, and was learning Hindi at a pretty elementary level at that point. And I remember catching things in that movie thinking, well, this is a little different, right? This is unusual. And watching it the second time, first of all, I reinforced that what Abdul taught me is heavily Urdu infused.
Yeah.
I remember watching, there was some point in which Hrithik Roshan was expressing shock about something that had happened with a military strategy. And he said, Kaisa mumkin ho sakta hai? How can this possibly have happened?
Yeah.
I remember mumkin is not what in a pure Hindi you would say. You'd say ho sakta
hai. That's right.
So little things like that I would pick up and I thought, that's exactly how I would have said it. And I've had more than one person comment on the way that I sound like a Muslim guy is the way a few people have phrased it. But when I watch certain movies, they're so infused with English now, even to the point where I think a few of them aren't even using much Hindi at all now. It's a whole different game, a whole different game.
Yeah, I mean, I just recently saw the movie, it's called Ferrari Ki Sawari, and it's about it's in the contemporary Indian context about, based around cricket actually, and there was a lot of English in that movie, so if you weren't familiar with English as a language, you would really struggle to understand what was going on in that movie. And so, you know, there is, I can say this, you know, safely, confidently say this for Urdu as well, and for Hindi, as far as I understand, it's true. The actual utility of the language from a writing perspective has diminished drastically. So, practical application of Hindi and Urdu for business, to get jobs. I don't know if in India they to fill out government forms, if it's still in Hindi or is it really in English. But people are not incentivized to actually write Hindi or Urdu. But really, it's there to get a job and to get by in society and be upwardly mobile. It's really advantageous to speak a form of Urdu or Hindi that injects a lot of English into it, which actually signifies that you're a person who's educated. And in one respect, it's making Hindi and Urdu this mainstream accessible language across the world. So as I said, people from Nepal, some people from Sri Lanka are able to understand Hindi, and I know from Bangladesh for a fact that, you know, a lot of people do speak Hindi, and a lot of it is because of Indian cinema. But it's bringing all these countries together, and as they sees, and there are lots of words in there in Bollywood movies that people use that are becoming universal. So are using it, being used in marketing, branding, advertising as well. However, the downside is it's the serious literature or poetry any content of substance. It's getting harder and harder to articulate that in Hindi and Urdu as it's spoken in the mainstream.
Yeah, you know, that's the way that, so India as a place accommodates outside ideas very easily. If you think about the way in which religious sensibilities exist in India, didn't matter if it was a Hindu or a Muslim, but so many would always give a philosophical perspective to me by saying, it is all one, it is all one, right? So they would kind of concede this broad, hey, you know, yes, I'm this way, this is my path, but everything is all unified. So that I think that openness asserted itself in language, like you were talking about. There are English words that have more or less replaced the Hindi word, and there are Urdu words that are used intentionally to infuse beauty into someone who's speaking a Hindi sentence. So I'll give you an example. When I was working with Abdul, I asked him certain words. How do you say important? And he would sort of look off and think for a little bit, and then he'd look at me and just say important. I'd say, yeah. No, it's a Hindi word. And he'd say, no, you don't have to say that. Same with party. If there's a Hindi word for party, I've never heard it, right? And so yeah. I think that openness to accommodate other things has almost done away with Hindi. So as a pure form. So I'll give you another movie example. Have you seen Lagan?
Yes.
Right, great movie, right? And set yeah. in a point in which you know, the Britishers were there, but it was a rural setting, and certainly the English words hadn't supplanted any Hindi words. And I said, all right, I'm going to watch this movie, and I'm going to try and see if an English word gets put in the script by mistake. And I was blown away at the end of the movie. Not a single
yeah.
one. I mean, at that point, I was learning loads of different words that I had never heard of. But that's not the way a script would be written for any setting post, what, 1950. I mean, it would be.
That's right. You know, in Lagan specifically, I learned a word, and I was truly impressed. The word for spin. So it was just for those of you who haven't seen the movie, there's the movie is about freedom, Indian freedom from the British, and it's channeled through cricket, and to spin the ball. Obviously, there are a bunch of villagers playing with the British regiment that was posted in that area, and so these villagers were trying to explain to each other how to spin the ball and talking about spinning the ball, and they actually used the word pirki, Dina, which is that's the word to spin the ball, and I was just floored by that and some of the other research that must have gone into creating the script for this movie. It was mind-blowing, and I was so impressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's there are. It's kind of a sad thing in a way that you know, the Shuddh Hindi, the pure form of it, is increasingly diminishing. So I asked my colleagues at the company where I was. I said, hey, who really speaks Hindi anymore? I mean, the standalone proper Hindi. And they said Advani, the head
yeah.
of the Congress party,
yeah.
right? I think he
yep.
was.
L.K. Advani, that's right.
Exactly. And he, I think he was, is he Sindhi or he was born?
Yeah, so I think he's with the BJP as opposed to Congress.
Yeah, I
and
right.
Yeah. And Advani is generally a Sindhi name. Last name, but I'm not quite sure. But so they said that he speaks proper Hindi.
Yeah, and actually, so that sets my question much better. BJP, for anyone who knows politics, yes, he is, by virtue of having been born on the other side of the partition, and then being at the helm of the BJP, which I think may be subject for another podcast, but I think it stokes Hindutva nationalism in maybe some not so nice ways. That he has expunged any English or Urdu from his Hindi is what I've heard. And I don't know
yeah.
that, but it wouldn't surprise me if anyone were to. But they weren't making a political point. They were just saying, yes, he speaks a very beautiful form of
yeah.
Hindi.
And there was a movement a few years ago, for example, the names of cities from Bombay to Mumbai, from Calcutta to Kolkata, and there were several other, Chennai, et cetera, several other cities that names were actually reverted back to their original Hindi or indigenous form, and that movement was there. But more and more, as India's market opens up, I think people are looking for ways to make the language more accessible. I mean, I know I was recently reading an article about Indian Americans growing up here in the United States, and some of them are going back to India for careers because they just think it's a dynamic place to be. And for them, language will have to be mainstreamed, so to speak, and made more accessible. An example of that was in Amir Khan's movie called Dhobi Ghat, in which the young lady comes back. I think she returns from the United States, and she's interacting in India and navigating through it. But, you know, she has a slight accent in their Hindi, but she's able to access the language and speak to people who've actually grown up in India in an urban setting. So I think there's this inclination or pressure to make the language more accessible, but at the same time, the trade-off is really you're losing vocabulary and the ability to express yourself exclusively in Hindi, and same goes for Urdu, for that matter. And that's a real challenge, and I'm wondering where that's going to go in the long run as far as the dilution of both languages is concerned.
Yeah, time will tell. Time will tell, because so we're talking about Amir Khan and his nephew Imran, right? He's the big thing now, and I'm sure Amir is taking a step back as he ages and probably just wants to get a little more enjoyment out of life. But he's producing more, and he seems to have handed the mantle on to this Imran. Most of what Imran speaks in his movies is English now, right? I mean, it's just
that's right.
Total paradigm shift, especially if you're under 25 and in an urban setting. It's just a whole different deal.
Yeah, and I'm, specifically I notice parts, dialogues in movies where actors and actresses say something in Hindi, and they must repeat it in English or the other way around, and so just for emphasis. So they'll say, mujhe ye nahi karna, ya mujhe ye karne ka dil nahi chahta. And then they would emphasize it, I just don't feel like doing it. And so Hindi movies more and more, and also if you listen to interviews of stars and interviews of intellectuals even for that matter, you would see this emphasis. Something is said in Hindi, and then for emphasis it's translated into English and vice versa. So I think that's very interesting that has happened, and I'm excited about how accessible the language has become. The Urdu-Hindi question, initially, I know earlier on in Bollywood history, a lot of the screenplays and a lot of the momentous Bollywood movies in history have had Urdu screenplays, and also people were masters at Urdu. Writing screenplays. So one of the masters is Gulzar, actually. He's he writes screenplays. He's written screenplays for some amazing, amazing movies in Indian cinema history. And he is he writes in Urdu. And he's actually of a Sikh background. Another example of Urdu and keeping Urdu alive in Indian cinema and also in music is Jagjit Singh, who recently passed away. He is one of the sole reasons why Urdu as a language and the vocabulary of Urdu did not just fade away from cinema and music in the 80s and 90s, where it was, I believe it could have easily, because he carried, he made Urdu relevant through his music, through his ghazals. And some of his others were in commercial movies. He made Urdu relevant again and vibrant. And that's why we still hear Urdu words in Bollywood movies today.
Yeah, it's the distinction between Urdu and Hindi. There's obviously a lot of ways to unravel that dynamic between the two. for me, it was very eye-opening. I'll give a quick little anecdote. So I was at my house on the weekend watching, I think it was NDTV, and I'm thinking Sharif, but I know that's not the right one. Who was the guy that was more or less the military leader of Pakistan?
Musharraf, General Pervez Musharraf.
So he was given a press conference, and this was after Sharif had landed but not been let out of the plane. And I think Musharraf was kind of stepping down, and he was given a press conference. And it was – so I have been in Hyderabad for a year and a half at this point, right? I'm hearing Hyderabadi Hindi, and I'm watching Bollywood movies, and you know, was pretty comfortable in the language. But then I heard him speaking, and I thought, that's what I understand. That's what I've been learning. And in a lot of ways, I think, obviously, what probably wasn't classical Urdu. It was probably that Urdu that is calibrated to the whole subcontinent, right? So it was probably free of a lot of classical Urdu words. But I thought, that way he's speaking, that's a lot more like what I understand than what I have to use out in the street in Hyderabad. So that opened my eyes that even in South India, there are pockets of communities and people like Abdul who have held on to that connection to Urdu, even though geographically they're deeply removed from it, and removed from it by probably a century of ancestor migration. So, but hey, let me tell you a little bit about what it's like to use Hindi as a white person. Because as was said one time, I read this, a guy said, the first time I saw a white person speak Hindi, it was like seeing a dog chirp. And it was basically the wrong sound coming out of, expected. Even recently, I was talking to a guy, and I could tell he was Indian, Sunny Rai, he's a colleague. And we were at a bar after work with some other people, and I said, hey, where were you born? I did the whole lead-in thing I usually do.
Yeah.
I said, so you speak Hindi? And he said, well, Punjabi, but I also speak Hindi. I said, I speak Hindi. And he gave that smile like, okay, yeah, use your little phrase,
That's right.
Ask
me what my name is in Hindi, and then we'll have you'll get a kick out of it. Yeah.
A couple apkanam kyahes, and we're good to go.
That's right.
And all that.
That's right.
So I went into this whole thing, and every once in a while I'd get someone who was a little put off by it, like, this is too weird or whatever, but he started smiling. And then he got really giddy. He's like, what are you doing? You really speak Hindi. So I would ask him, I was trying to get him to speak Hindi, because that's the next thing that people have trouble with.
That's right.
It's so out of context that actually to return a sentence to me in Hindi becomes weird. So I said, I was asking about his family. I said, "Kya apke mata pita ji America mein rehte hain?" And he said, 6 months here, 6 months there. I said, "Aya, che mahine ke liye istesh mein, che mahine ke liye Bharat mein." And he started cracking up. He's like, "Don't correct me." Because he was having trouble. So I've noticed this tendency to totally get what I'm saying, but not to re-engage, because there's probably a few reasons. A, the face it's coming out of doesn't make sense. B, obviously I've got a very accented sort of Hindi. And C, I've probably got a bit of a bookish Hindi, right? A bit of a school, what you're taught in school type Hindi, and not exactly what it may sound like where he grew up. But he eventually came around and we traded a few sentences. But I've noticed that tendency to be like responding to me in English.
So let me see if I can take a stab at explaining this myself. I mean, so there's a nuance to this. When I meet someone who's Indian or Pakistani for that matter, more times than not, we don't initiate speaking in Hindi or Urdu right away. And it's a very funny thing, even though he or she knows that I speak the language, and I can tell that they do as well. And it's a little bit of reservation in speaking the language. It's a little bit of formality that we just don't go right to it. And once we do, once that door is opened and that formality has been bypassed, or we get past that initial initial reservation, is then the floodgates open and we speak interspersed Hindi easily and comfortably. But I think it has a lot to do with even in Pakistan and in India with some of my Indian friends, and that door is not open right away most of the time, unless you get somebody who's really, really great at conversation, making someone feel very comfortable from the get-go, and leads off in Hindi. But it is a certain amount of formality and reservation that people have initially while getting to know each other. And then when they start to feel comfortable, they get informal, then they start to speak Hindi. So part of it may be that, where at the drop of a hat or at the initial meeting, people generally don't start speaking Hindi and Urdu to one another, even though they know that the other person does speak the language.
Does it remove the social distance? And the reason I ask that is Abdul always emphasized using up. So I know how to use tum, but I don't, because I can conjugate the verbs, but it wasn't anything that that I used. So always calibrating up to op, I would start using it in the workplace. And I remember one of my colleagues saying, I think you're increasing the distance between you and me by using op all the time. You don't need to op me. And so I realized that there is a distance in the language itself. But maybe is using Hindi like once you've established a deeper rapport, then you're going to go a little bit.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right, because I think to a large extent when you start speaking Hindi, especially in the United States, that means that your relationship has gone to a more informal level, mm-hmm. and which also means that you can open yourself up to talking about things other than work, other than you talk about family, and now you can talk about apprehensions, you can talk about the commonality of the immigrant experience and all of those things. But if you keep the conversation in English and you don't break in or intersperse Hindi or Urdu into it, then it's still at a formal level. The op thing is very interesting because it depends on where you are. In northern India, for example, in Delhi, for anyone who's older, you would use the word op. But for example, in Delhi, they use it in a way that's very different from the way they use it, let's say, in Urdu-speaking Karachi. In Pakistan, for example, in Delhi they would say "Aap kahan ja rahe ho." In true Urdu speaking territories or communities, it's really "Aap kahan ja rahe hain."
Yeah,
and it's kind of a
ho conjugates with tum, right? So that's kind
that's of, right. That's right. But in Delhi, that's pretty common for someone to say "Aap kahan ja rahe ho," "Aap ye kar rahe ho." I recently saw a movie about Delhi life, actually, and if someone wants to get a very good taste of Delhi lingo and how Delhiites speak, a lot of Delhiites, it was called Vicky Donor, and it's really an interesting movie about this person who is actually a sperm donor in Indian society, and it cuts through a lot of taboos, and it's a very interesting movie. But anyway, from the language perspective, it uses a lot of that. Aap kya kar rahe ho? Uncle, aap kya kar rahe ho? Ya auntie, aap kya kar rahe ho? They talk about and in Hindi and in Delhi, you also, which is not as common in other, let's say, in Urdu speaking parts of South Asia, you would use the word tu, and not even tum, but tu, as a real way of being informal with somebody. You do it with a very close friend, or you would do it someone who's a colleague, etc., who you're very close with. So tu is generally not used, for example, in Pakistan and Karachi. It's not that prevalent. You pretty much stop at tum. And if someone's older, you would definitely go with op. So how the op and the tum and the tu and the formality and informality comes into play is very interesting, and it differs from context to context. One of the things I've noticed is as soon as when I meet people from India, a lot of people from India start talking to me in more of a polite, formal way. So they start using the word op when they're talking to me, and you know, it sounds a little odd because it's a little too formal for me, but they think that Urdu is just that formal. But there are ways to refer to somebody in a very intimate way and in an informal way in Urdu as well, but we just, you know, don't use tu, or we're particular about aligning the verb tense with the noun.
Yeah, I remember a lot of people, as soon as I became a little less formal, people, I think it's less formal, because they always used to walk up and say, Kese ho op? And I thought,
right,
that's sort of like saying, what's up, sir? You know, like informal and formal mixed together.
Right. So on the Punjab side in Pakistan, for example, you would hear that, Kese ho op? But, for example, on the Karachi side, the Urdu-speaking side, you would never hear that. You would say, op kese hai?
Right.
Yeah, kese hai op?
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, in closure here, I actually remember pretty fondly the fact that there were a few other expats that that learned Hindi quite well. There were, I would say, I think the size of the expat community probably doubled in the years that we were there. It's probably even a lot bigger now. But we had Abdul was, I mean, the guy was just doing really, really well. And, you know, for him it was great money. For us it was modestly priced. You'd never get language lessons at the rate that we paid him, right? It was awesome for everyone involved.
Win-win situation, yeah.
Yeah, and I would say he had like 20 students, actually, some couples. There would be like a group of women and that kind of thing. And he would confide that, you know, for a lot of them it's just not happening. You know, it's not happening, but it was fun. And but he grouped, we were friends anyway, but he grouped a guy named Theo from Cape Town and a guy named John from UK. And me and the three of us actually would take lessons with him. And it was kind of interesting. So he would come in, and he had this white cat he loved. And cats as pets were not so common in India, but he really loved his white cat with the green eyes, would come in, tell stories about it, and the cat scratched my hand, and people come by to look at it. And he would sit there, and I realized partway through that particular conversation, I thought, this is entirely natural. It was all in Hindi, of course, and he wasn't teaching us or whatever. He was just sharing his anecdotes, and we were all asking questions and sharing observations and laughing. And it was clicking along. So I think, you know, if that's not entirely uncommon in a setting like Hyderabad, then you think of Delhi and Mumbai and the diplomatic corps and everything else, I think there have to be Gora, right, Caucasian people in the thousands now who have some familiarity with Hindi, including, of course, the fluent ones like Chris Hale that we've had on the podcast. But that's just a neat thing. I mean, that's a wonderful development that Kuch Gore Log Hindi Bat Karte Hai.
Bilkul. It is a wonderful development, and as we continue to record more and more podcasts, I'd like to get more of those folks on our podcast and pick their brains about their experience and, you know, ask some questions about whether, you know, if they're fluent in Hindi and they're also not originally from India, you know, how do they think? What percentage are they thinking in English and what percentage are they thinking in Urdu? And so lots of questions, lots to explore, but another time. Thanks so much, Bill, for spending this time with me and sharing your experience in learning Hindi.
Haan ji, shukriya aapko.